Gareth stalked off. He was tired of talking. 111. The Eastern Kingdom, Feria. Gwendolyn Storm. She probably should have gone after him immediately, but it was pretty clear he needed some alone time of his own. So she waited a day, thinking, catching up on sleep. Gwendolyn felt bad about how she'd handled the aftermath of the battle that was being called the Dragon Defense. She should have gone to Gareth, offered her help. Then she would have known Gryon was dead. She could have helped him through that, too. Instead, she'd slipped through the dead and living, until she spotted Gareth looking no worse for wear. Once she was certain he was not seriously injured, she snuck away. For a week, she'd mourned Alistair's death all over again. It was strange, feeling that sharp pain, like a knife to the chest, all these years later. She'd thought killing a dragon would give her closure, but it had had the opposite effect, reopening wounds she thought had long healed, their scars fading. Finally, however, she returned to the castle, eventually bullying several guards into allowing her to visit the king in his private quarters, where apparently he'd been holed up ever since he gave the command to pull back all legionnaires currently across the borders. Gareth sat in a wooden, high-backed chair, his head in his hands, his long dark hair falling in waves across his face. Gwendolyn entered the room silently, taking a seat, listening to Gareth's breathing, his deep, mournful exhalations. He'd lost a family. Not 2 years ago, he was one of five. Not 2 months ago, he was one of four. Not 2 weeks ago, he was one of two. Now he was one. The only ironclad left in the Four Kingdoms, save for a single cousin, Hardy. The end of a long line of strong rulers that had protected their people from being overrun by their enemies over the centuries. Gwendolyn could relate. When she lost her mother and father in short succession, far too soon in the lifespans of Oriens, it had broken her in half. If she was in Gareth's shoes, and she had been once, she wouldn't want to hear condolences. No, she wouldn't want to hear much of anything, save for the beating of her own heart to remind her she was still alive. A distraction, she remembered. Distracting herself had been the only way she'd been able to cope with the deaths of her loved ones. She'd thrown herself into helping others, using the Orion-given abilities she'd been blessed with to do as much good as she could. At the same time, she'd closed her heart off from the world, sheathing it in iron. "Go away," Gareth said, his face still hidden. "No," Gwen said. Gareth looked up, his eyes tired but dry. Gwen said, "What? You can visit me at home, but I can't reciprocate?"
"Suit yourself. Wallow with me."
"I would, but I'm all wallowed out." Gareth snorted. His fingers pulled at his sweat-soaked tendrils of black hair. "I don't know why I even care," he said after a few moments of silence. "Because he was your brother."
"Aye, and a shite brother he was. Growing up, he mocked me mercilessly. He had a huge iron chip on his shoulder at having been born third, and he was always trying to compensate for it. I think that's why he did what he did. Why he disowned me and waged war on three sides at once.
None of that matters now."
"Because I'm the king?"
Gwendolyn shook her head. How to explain? She wanted to scream at him, "You've been the king since the moment your father took his last breath, you dolt!" But she suspected berating him would be counterproductive. Something her father once told her, an old story, sprang into her mind at that exact moment, catching her by surprise. She hadn't thought of the story in decades, and yet she remembered her father's tale word for word, a perfect recollection. After he'd finished the story, Gwen had begged him to tell her again, but he'd refused. "It's a story to be heard once," he'd said. "Have you ever heard the story of the Telling Tree?" Gwen asked. Gareth frowned. "Does it involve war, drinking, and tickling fair maidens?" he asked. "Because those are the only kinds of stories my father told us growing up."
"No."
"Then no, I have not heard it."
"Good.
I shall tell you. Many years ago, long before the Crimeans discovered the Four Kingdoms, the Aurians lived in Ironwood. My ancestors were very different in those times. They felt connected to the forest, but they couldn't exactly explain why. Back then, the forest appeared just like any other. There were trees and plants and animals, panthers, hawks, squirrels, monkeys. Gwen didn't miss a beat. Aye, frisky monkeys that would steal your food between your plate and mouth. Gareth nodded, as if the story was suddenly becoming more familiar. Gwen continued, "The Aurians called themselves the Tellers. They knew nothing of ore, or Orion, or channeling." Gareth cocked his head to the side. "It's true. You wouldn't recognize us or Ironwood. We were a peaceful people, deeply attuned to the whisperings of nature. There was a tree, deep in the heart of the forest, the largest of them all, broader and taller than any other in Ironwood. It was known as the Telling Tree, and it was worshipped by the Tellers." Gwen could tell Gareth's interest was piqued, his body language having changed. He leaned toward her. "Go on." "The Telling Tree was where my ancestors went to pour out their problems. They kneeled on a bed of sharp stones, which cut into their knees. The purpose of these stones was to remind them to make the most of their time with the Telling Tree. The most determined, those tellers who could ignore the pain, would earn their just rewards." "What rewards? More time talking to a tree?" "That's just the thing. It wasn't just the telling that was important. They received answers." Gareth rolled his eyes. "I should have known it would be a talking tree." "Not exactly. After telling their problems to the Telling Tree, they would arise and be filled with answers. Maybe it was the tree's doing, a reward for them having suffered great pain to speak with it. Or perhaps the answers were already there, simply unlocked because of their faith." "Which is it? Was it a magical talking tree or not?" A hint of mocking had entered Gareth's tone. Gwendolyn viewed it as a good thing. She ignored the question and continued the story. "One day, a teller who had lost everything kneeled before the tree, pouring out his problems. The stones bit into him, but he ignored them, talking and talking throughout the day. He didn't stop until long after the sun was gone, and the stars twinkled in the night sky above the forest." She paused, recalling her father's exact words. "When he arose, streams of blood running down his knees, pooling at his feet, he heard the tree's answer in his head." "What did it say?" Gareth asked. And she almost laughed, because as a young girl she'd voiced the very same question at that very same moment. "Give up," Gwen said. "The teller was very angry. He'd suffered day and night before this tree to find a way to solve all his problems, and the Telling Tree had told him to give up. Rage boiled within him, spilling over. He withdrew a sharp instrument that his people used for cutting thick branches when they fell from the trees. And then he began cutting. If the tree was as big as you say it was, he probably didn't get very far." "Wrong. This was a determined man. He cut all night and into the next day. When people gathered to tell their problems to the Telling Tree, he threatened them with the blade. They backed off, unaccustomed to dealing with such violence. They were scared and uncertain. For days on end he cut and hacked and sawed, until he reached the tipping point, where the weight of the tree above could no longer be supported by the diminishing base. But the man didn't notice. Sweat was pouring into his eyes, and he was blind to anything but cutting, cutting, cutting. The base snapped, clamping down upon his blade and his arm, cracking them both in half. He howled, watching as the tree shifted, raining leaves and branches from the lofts of its uppermost boughs. Any satisfaction as to the progress he'd been making was lost to his fear and pain as the tree began to fall. Poor bastard. Aye. The tree fell on him, and he died. It destroyed hundreds, if not thousands, of other trees, too. Thankfully, none of the other tellers were hit. Perhaps it was luck. Perhaps it was some other power, a final gift from the Telling Tree. When the dust cleared and the tellers began to gather at the tree's base, the strangest thing happened. The ground opened and took the fallen tree into it, swallowing it whole. Any signs of the man were gone as well, leaving only a stump as broad as a plateau. One by one, the tellers climbed onto it, their mouths gaping in amazement. For there, written upon the endless rings, were their stories, their problems laid bare. That's when they realized that the answers had never come from the tree, which merely collected their problems, taking the weight of them from their shoulders, but from their own hearts, their own perseverance. The determined man who had cut down the tree had received the only answer his heart could give him, to give up. He was determined to tell his problems, but not to solve them. He wanted an easy solution, not the truth, which was that it would require a lot of hard work and time to overcome the adversity he faced. Gareth groaned. "I'm sensing a moral, but I think I'd rather take a punch in the face." "As satisfying as that would be," Gwen quipped, "I think you've taken enough hits lately. This isn't a true story, is it?"
"Why would you say that?"
"Because I've never heard about a stump in Ironwood. All the trees are huge and unbroken.
Just because you haven't seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. After the people finished reading their problems from the top of the stump, they departed. That's when something magical happened. The deposits of ore that had been hidden beneath the forest were drawn into the telling tree's roots, becoming a part of the stump, sheathing it in armor. The other trees took note, realizing it was the answer to their own problems, that they were susceptible to being chopped down, a fact they'd never realized until now. Soon the entire forest was protected by the ore, and so it remains to this day. My ancestors adapted, beginning to worship the ore, learning how to channel it. Becoming one with it, a mutual respect developed over time. In short, they became the Aurians.
Wait, am I supposed to be the stubborn dead guy, the telling tree, or the ore monkey?
That's for you to decide, Gwen said, allowing herself a wry smile.
All three, Gareth said. At one point in my life or another. I've been many things in my life. An arrogant prince, a royal prisoner, a disowned brother.
And now?
A king, he said. Now I am a king.
112. Unknown Location. Bane Garrick. Bane felt numb. He'd opened the door to his secret place to the Peacemaker, and all Rhone Loren had done was close it in his face. He'd tried threats. He'd tried violence. He'd tried fear. He'd tried truth. Each time the same result. He was alone. He didn't understand. He'd offered Rhone everything he was seeking, and still he'd turned him down. The Western Oracle had intended for them to work together, hadn't she? Chavos's body seemed to glow in the lantern light. He looked so peaceful he might be sleeping. For a moment, Bane pretended he was, and that he'd soon open his eyes and they'd eat and talk, and then Bane could fall asleep and not be alone. The man had been too weak-stomached and soft-hearted for the work that needed to be done. He was the same as Rhone, but without the courage and valor. He shook his head. No, that wasn't true. Chavos had been courageous in the end, even if that courage was misguided. Bane knew the plague would eventually kill him, unless he could convince Rhone Loren to save him. This world doesn't want peace, he thought, turning away from his dead friend. And I have no one. This was supposed to be his purpose, the entire reason he'd been put on this earth, in these lands, in this time, being death-marked and raised in a cold cave with bare black boots. Even his own father had abandoned him.
No more.
The two words surprised him, because he'd never considered them, never truly contemplated a different path. No, his destiny had been placed before his feet long before he was born, and he had no choice but to follow it. Right? But what if there was another way? What if, despite the Western Oracle's best intentions, the Fate Marks were unable to achieve the peace she'd envisioned? She was, after all, a human, and capable of error.
of failure. "But you haven't failed," thought Bane, hoping she could hear his mind wherever she was. "I won't fail you." Achieving peace would simply require a different approach. Yes, killing the foolhardy, warmongering rulers was a necessary evil, but new rulers only arose to take their places. Unless there was one strong, peace-loving ruler to oversee all of the four kingdoms, the cycle of war and violence would continue forever, or until everyone was dead. "Yes," he thought, "the four kingdoms shall become one, and I shall be their king." With that last thought circling his mind like a hungry vulture, Bane fell into a deep sleep with the beginnings of a smile on his face. The thrum of the plague through his blood faded into a dull beat, eclipsed by the hammering of his heart. 113. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Rhea Loren.
"Roth, why does everything have to be so difficult?" Rhea wondered,
as she stood atop the wall, watching the fires burn ever closer. Roth had forgiven her for lying to her people, right? Rathos could have killed her in an instant, but instead she'd been spared. All for what? To go up in flames with the rest of her kingdom. Ever since that day of triumph on the banks of the Bay of Bounty, the refugees had begun to arrive, a trickle at first, and later a waterfall. They brought news of the wildfire, which had somehow managed to leap from the tangle into the dry grasslands, swarming furiously across the plains. Unnatural, they called the fire, as if some demon spurred it ever onwards. Rhea called it a bad stroke of luck. She, of course, welcomed the refugees with open arms, providing her soldiers to set up a makeshift camp for them. There wasn't room inside the walls of Night's End, so they would be the first to burn when the fires arrived. She had a feeling that the walls wouldn't stop the flames anyway. So far, nothing had, though they'd tried all the usual methods relied on during the dry season. Controlled fires had been set, burning the grass away until there was nothing left for the flames to eat. And yet, the wildfire had simply streamed across the dirt, unflinching. Next, trenches had been dug, but the flames simply released sparks, which were carried on the wind, landing across the ditches, bursting into flame once more. Several determined farmers had even attempted to form a water brigade, passing barrels down a line and dumping them on the flames. Many had lost their lives in the attempt, before the survivors eventually fled, joining the other refugees at Night's End.
"Perhaps the fires are unnatural," Rhea mused. "Perhaps it is the punishment we have earned."
Closer and closer the flames came, like a merciless army clad in burning armor. The refugees on the outskirts of the walls began to scream and run, knocking each other over to try to escape to the ocean. Others attempted to infiltrate the city via the gates, but they'd already been closed for the night. The guards were under strict orders not to open them for anyone, lest the flames find a way into the city. The camp was taken by the fire. Flames licked at the walls, and then began climbing.
"Your Highness, we have to go,"
one of her furies said, grabbing her arm. Her eyes darted to the woman's strong grip, and she slowly released it.
"Please, we'll all perish if we stay here."
"Roth will save us,"
Rhea had said.
He had to, else what was the purpose of her great victory in the Bay of Bounty, her defeat of Darkspell, her conquering of Rathos? What was the purpose of any of it?
"What of the people?"
the Fury asked.
"The streets are flooded. They are demanding for the gates to be opened, so they can flee to the ocean."
In a way, it was amusing. People on opposite sides of the gates all pounding, some to get in, some to get out.
"Do not open the gates,"
Rhea said.
"Tell them to return to their homes. Roth will save them on this night. Tell them to have faith."
The faithless Fury nodded and left. Rhea continued to watch the carnage, the chaos, with interest.
"Fear is a greater enemy than any other," she realized. "Faith is the only shield in dark times."
The fires reached the tops of the walls, streaming down the opposite side, spurred by a stiff breeze brought by an armada of clouds blowing in from the north. Rhea stared at the sky, feeling her skin start to tingle. Could it be? Screams, the slap of feet, cries of fear. The first homes began to catch fire, the stone itself burning like dry wood. The castle, too, was afire now, the walls springing flaming leaks. But Rhea only had eyes for the sky, the boiling cauldron of grey clouds billowing like smoke. The first raindrop hit the back of her hand. As she reached down to touch it, the second hit her nose, making her laugh. She stuck out her tongue and caught another there, tasting its sweetness. The answer it contained. The seventh heaven opened, emptying its contents, beginning a new season. Wrath's Tears, it was called, when their god cried for the sins of the people, the souls lost, the souls claimed. All else had failed to extinguish the flames, but now, in the steady downpour, the fires began to disappear, a few at first, and then across the board. Rhea was soaked to the skin in an instant, the water pouring from her round belly, but she didn't care. Once again, Wrath had saved her. Her child, too. Wrath's vengeance was headed south, and she would be its bearer. This is the end of Book 3, but the story continues with 4 postlude stories in the Fate-marked epic series. Keep listening after the credits to hear more. You have been listening to Soulmarked, Book 3 of the Fate-marked epic. Produced by Greg Lawrence. Associate producer Emily Durr. Text copyright 2017 by David Estes. Production copyright 2017 by Podium Publishing, all rights reserved. Postludes. Postlude 1. Gareth Ironclad. The Eastern Kingdom. Circa 522. 7-year-old Gareth Ironclad, firstborn son of King Orin the Juggernaut Ironclad and Queen Ira Ironclad, loved everything about Faerea. He loved the aromatic smells as he walked with his father and brothers through the market, braised leg of lamb and smoked beef tenders and roasted quail. He loved the gleaming armor displayed by the Orion smiths, freshly oiled and polished. He loved the way the iron-sheathed trees grew amongst the village, the heart of the forest pumping life into the city he called home. But, more than anything, he loved the way the Faereans and Orians alike looked at him, with respect, with admiration. They nodded their heads and tipped their caps, and shouted greetings to him and his brothers. Even better was the reaction he received from the legionnaires, with their sheathed weapons and jointed plate. In fact, a platoon was passing at this very moment. Gareth grinned as the men and women soldiers beat their iron chests with their fists in honour of the king. But once the king had passed, their attention turned to Gareth. "Bless the shield!" some cried. Others shouted, "Hail the shield!" Gareth didn't understand how he'd earned such an impressive nickname, the shield, but he loved it just the same. And though he knew pride was beneath a prince, his chest swelled anyway. One of his twin brothers, Grian, pouted. "We all have the same name day," he pointed out, as he liked to do. "I don't see what makes him so special." Agitatedly, he ran a hand over the short tufts of reddish-brown hair poking from his scalp. Unlike Gareth and Guy, who wore their hair long, Grian liked to have the castle barber trim it every few weeks. Anything to look different than his brothers. "He can't change his face, nor his chestnut eyes," Gareth thought with amusement. "He was born first," Guy said sternly. He'd always been the most serious of the three. "So he pushed and shoved his way out of Mother before we did. That makes him the shield." Grian glared at Gareth. Gareth beamed back. "It was my first victory." He raised a fist in the air. His brother could complain all he wanted, but it wouldn't change anything. Grian tried to grab Gareth's collar, but Guy stepped between them. For as long as Gareth could remember, Guy had defended him from Grian. Not that he needed it. When they fought with dull-edged swords, he got in as many licks as he took. And yet Guy was always there, always by his side. He was getting tired of it. He was a prince, destined to greatness, like his mother always said, not a child. Gareth pushed his brother away, but Guy muscled him back. For a few moments they struggled for dominance while Grian smirked at them, but froze when their father boomed,
"Enough! I will not have the princes of the realm acting like street urchins."
"Grian was being an ore monkey, and Guy wouldn't let me at him," Gareth complained. Guy said, "Grian was being an ore monkey."
"Hey!"
Grian protested. The king cuffed Guy on the back of the head, followed by Gareth. Gareth stumbled, barely maintaining his balance. His brother did the same. It was like being clobbered by a mason's sledge. Grian sniggered, but was cut off when he received his own smack to the skull.
"You are all ironclads," their father said.
He shielded his eyes from a wayward shaft of sunlight blazing through the branches. His bald head was already turning pink. His hand slid down his cheek and tugged on his thick red beard, which was braided in three places. The expression he wore was thoughtful, distant, as he said,
"The same blood and ore runs through your veins. Never forget that."
He turned away, but added over his shoulder,
"You can settle it on the training grounds."
He strode away, his massive foe hammer swinging where it was sheathed at his hip. Chastened, the three fell into stride behind him as he continued toward the castle. Just loud enough that Gareth could hear, but not the king, Grian muttered,
"Shield? Bah! More like a wilted cabbage leaf."
"You don't know what you're talking about, Grian," Guy said.
"And you do? I should have been first. Anyway, father was the youngest brother in his family, and now he's the king. And I'm not an ore monkey."
Guy said to Gareth,
"Don't listen to him. You are the firstborn and the shield. Everyone says so."
Normally, Gareth would relish such a reminder, but something about the way his brother said it sounded unusual, almost strained, like a grimace of pain. Gareth studied Guy's face. His lips were tight, his eyes narrowed. If anything, he looked even more serious than usual.
"But what does that even mean?" Gareth asked.
Guy looked away as if he hadn't heard. He changed the subject.
"What do you think Mother has planned for our 8th name day?" "Only the biggest feast of our lives," Grian said, licking his lips. "I saw a dozen wagons entering the castle gates this morning. They were full."
Gareth frowned, still trying to catch Guy's gaze, but his brother refused to look at him. The conversation had already moved on.
"I heard there'll be Orion channelers," Guy said. "They're going to put on a show."
At that, Gareth completely forgot about the strange tone his brother's voice had taken just a moment before.
"Truly?"
"Aye," Guy said, finally meeting his eyes with a smile. "They'll be riding orhawks and ore panthers.
If Grian is there, they can ride an ore monkey too," Gareth said. "I'm not an ore monkey," Grian said,
trying to reach around Guy to hit Gareth. The castle's iron gates loomed ahead, guarded by the largest soldiers in the realm, including Bjorn Stonesledge, the Ironmarked, standing a head taller than anyone else. His iron fist pendant hung heavily from his neck.
"Ho, iron fist," the king bellowed.
Behind the giant man, the gates began to open. Well, perhaps open was the wrong word. Instead, they seemed to liquefy, melting away to either side and vanishing inside the wall. Gareth craned his neck and tried to spot the Orion gatekeepers who were channeling the ore. He frowned, seeing nothing but metal. They were well hidden. The king and Bjorn Stonesledge embraced with a hearty slap on each other's back.
"Any news from the front?" the king asked.
The front was currently the Black Cliffs, the razor-like rocks separating the east from the north. The Hundred Years' War between the four kingdoms had started long before Gareth was born. Talk of the war and the front were so commonplace that he barely thought about it anymore. He knew one day he and his brothers would lead the legionnaires into battle, but it felt so distant it might have been 1,000 years off. Grian, on the other hand, always seemed to perk up at talk of war, and now was no exception.
"Have we smashed Darin to bits yet?"
he asked, rubbing his hands together. King Ironclad chuckled at his son's question.
If only it were that easy. First, we have to find safe passage through the mountains. A difficult task under normal circumstances,
Bjorn agreed,
and almost impossible while being harried by northern archers the entire time. We received a stream from Crow's Nest while you were away from the castle. That promising tunnel we discovered at the beginning of the last moon cycle? A dead end.
The king shook his head in frustration.
If only Raiders Pass wasn't swamped with Westerners right now.
He waved the thought away with a large hand.
Let them destroy each other, and then we shall have them both.
He laughed gregariously, which was the only way Gareth had ever known his father to laugh.
We could scale the razor, like Uncle Corrin once did,
Grian suggested.
I could do it. I'm a top climber.
It was so easy, Gareth couldn't help himself.
That's because you're an ore monkey, he said,
barely bothering to disguise the insult behind a cough. It drew a rare smile from Guy. Grian fired a scathing look at them both, but the adults didn't seem to notice the exchange. The king said,
I admire your enthusiasm, son, but the razor is as steep and slick as a bare metal wall. Mine brother was the only one to ever lead a platoon over the Black Cliffs, and he paid the ultimate price in the end. Even if we had enough soldiers who could climb it, Darin has the finest archers positioned strategically along the cliffs. We would be cut to ribbons at best. At worst, we'd drown in the sea. No, it's better to go through the mournful mountains if we can find a way.
Grian blushed, which only made Gareth's grin widen further. Guy said very seriously,
We found a way through once. We can do it again.
That's the spirit, my boy,
the king said, slapping him on the back. Despite his bravado, Gareth noticed his father's grimace at the reminder of the last time the mountains had been breached, more than 15 years ago, a story he'd heard 50 times. It was the battle in which his uncle Corrin Thunder, Ironclad, had been killed. As his father had alluded to, Corrin had led a platoon over the Razor as a distraction for the main force, which was commanded by Orin as they snuck through a tunnel and into the north. By the time Orin's soldiers had arrived, the battle was nearly lost, and his brother was already grievously wounded. To make matters worse, the Northerners had mounted a fierce counterattack and forced what was left of Orin's army back through the passage, which they then destroyed with hammer and chisel. The mountain had been sealed ever since. Later, Gareth's grandfather had died of natural causes. That was when Orin Ironclad was proclaimed King of the East and Protector of the Realm. Gareth, try as he might, couldn't remember any of it. He was nudged from his revelry by Grian's shoulder as they entered through the gates.
"Ready to settle things?"
Grian asked.
"I'll even give you the first hit,"
Gareth retorted. Guy rolled his eyes.
"I'm going to see if Mother needs any help with tonight's preparations."
While Grian raced off to fetch a pair of dented practice swords, Gareth watched his other brother depart around the bend of the first of the castle's walled inner rings. Just before Guy disappeared, he turned around and met Gareth's eyes. From a distance, his gaze looked haunted, like he'd seen a ghost.
"On guard!"
Grian yelled, tossing Gareth a sword and springing forward. Hours later, as the sun began to disappear into the thick of ironwood, Gareth and Grian were exhausted and breathless, but friends again. Grian clapped him on the shoulder and said,
"You fight like a Westerner. You fight like an ore monkey,"
Gareth spat back, but this time it wasn't meant as an insult. Grian laughed.
"Have you seen the way they gnash their teeth? Those creatures are vicious."
Gareth tried to return his smile, but now that the fight was over, his mind had returned to the strange things Guy had said, that unhinged look in his eyes.
"Hey, Grian?"
"Yeah, weakling?"
Gareth ignored the comment.
"Has Guy been acting strange?"
Grian snorted.
"He always acts strange."
"I mean, more strange."
Grian seemed to consider, finally waving the idea away with his sword, now even more scratched and dented than before.
"Nah, he's just excited for our name day."
Gareth wanted to feel relieved at his brother's words, but didn't. Instead, he felt like there was a big hole in his stomach, with wind whistling through unfettered. Or maybe he was just hungry. Giving credence to that very thought, his stomach rumbled as they approached the grand banquet hall. Something smelled divine. Gryan grinned at Gareth and said,
"Last one to the roast duck is an ore monkey's cousin."
He shoved Gareth and took off, but Gareth managed to keep his feet and give chase, catching him halfway to the entrance. As they jostled for the lead, neither of them noticed the broad form stepping from the hall and into their path. By the time they did notice, it was all they could do to skid to a stop. Gareth was a heartbeat too slow, stumbling awkwardly into his mother, who was wearing her very best dress armor. He rattled off and tumbled to the ground, collecting dirt in his mouth. Shaking away the stars that blanketed his vision, his mother's face materialized a piece at a time. She already had Gryan by the scruff of his shirt. His feet were dangling from the ground, his face turning red.
"Where have you been?" she demanded.
"Training," Gryan squeaked.
"It was Father's idea, I swear, on the great forest of Varian. Tell him, Gareth."
Gareth tried to nod, but blinked instead. His vision was still swimming, his head full of angry bees. Queen Ira Redfern Ironclad was a large woman on her worst day, both tall and strong, but from this particular vantage point she might have been a giant. He felt like he'd run into a metal wall, and the wall hadn't so much won as annihilated him.
"I don't care if Orion herself descended from her forest in the clouds and told you to train. Today is your 8th name day, a very auspicious day. The feast begins promptly at sunset, and you smell like a chamber pot. Get cleaned up before I'm forced to scrub you myself."
She dropped Gryan, and he landed on his backside with a yelp. Frantically, he helped Gareth to his feet, and they hobbled away as fast as they could. Being scrubbed by their mother was akin to torture. Given her current mood, Gareth thought, torture might be the better option. "Thanks," he managed to say to Gryan, who continued to help him walk.
"I was afraid she was going to eat you," he said,
and they burst into a fit of giggles.
"Or both of us," Gareth said. "You for an entree and me for dessert. With whipped cream on top."
Gareth laughed again, feeling good, despite his throbbing head and beating heart. He hadn't laughed like this with Gryan in a while. Their laughter faded, however, when they spotted Guy striding toward them. He was dressed in fine grey trousers and a white tie-up shirt bearing the Northern Sigil, the crossed swords on a field of black. Guy Ironclad was also embroidered on one of the breasts. His face looked freshly washed, practically glowing. His long ginger hair was tied back in a knot. To Gareth, he looked like he'd swallowed a frog, a plump green one.
"Glad to see you find the most important day of our lives so amusing," Guy said, brushing past them.
Gryan looked ready to stalk after him, but Gareth stopped him with a hand on his shoulder.
"He's just mad we've been training all day while he's been working," Gareth said.
He said it as much for himself as for his brother's temper.
"Aye," Gryan said. "That's probably it. Come on."
They headed inside, passing metal walls that changed from day to day, channeled by the Aurians into intricate patterns depicting scenes from nature. More than once, the king had requested battle scenes, but the Aurians refused.
"Battles are meant to be fought, not channeled,"
Gareth had heard one of the forest dwellers say. Although Gareth would never admit it out loud, he preferred the nature scenes. They were calming, with blooming flowers, ore panthers springing from branch to branch, massive trees standing sentinel. The walls of the castle were just another thing he loved about Feria. Gryan pushed into the bathing room, a gout of steam bursting through the door. Two iron tubs were filled to the brim with hot water. One was being emptied by a bath worker, Guy's tub. Gryan stripped down and catapulted into the water with a splash, screaming as it burned his skin. Gareth took his time, folding each sweat and dirt-stained garment as he placed them in the washing bin. Slowly, he eased into the scalding water. Gryan was staring at him.
"You act like a woman sometimes," he said, smirking.
Gareth's cheeks reddened, and he hid his embarrassment by submerging himself. When he came up, A soapy cloth smacked him in the face. Gareth retaliated with a splash, and soon half the water was on the floor and they were hastily toweling themselves off. Still laughing and pushing each other, Gareth froze when they came to the bench that had their clothes already laid out. All amusement vanished like an exploding green star.
"What the hell?" Gryan said, speaking first.
"I..." Gareth didn't know what to say. Inside, he felt his heart beating faster, his chest swelling with pride, and he had the all-encompassing urge to smile, to leap into the air, to run around the room in excitement. It took every bit of his self-control to just stand there, staring.
"Figures,"
Gryan muttered, grabbing his clothes, a black pair of pants and black shirt stitched with his name and nothing else, and stalking off. Any bond the day's activities had formed between them seemed to snap like a broken rope. Gareth reached for the glittering armor suit engraved with his name and an ornate, curving shield. The moment his brother was gone, his lips curled into a smile so broad his cheeks began to ache. Gareth stared at himself in the mirror, unbelieving. Though it was only his 8th name day, a tall boy who might have been 12 stared back at him. The boy was clad in beautiful new armor, form-fitting in the Orion style, the seams nearly invisible to the naked eye. He held a helmet under one arm, casually, like he did it all the time. There was a gleam in his eye so foreign it might have been that of a Calypsian or Phoenician. The gleam was confidence, he knew. More than he'd ever felt in his 8 short years of life. "Is that really me?" he asked himself for the 12th time. "I look like my warrior, my son," a voice said from the side. Startled, he spun to find his mother standing in the doorway to his dressing room.
I look like a warrior, truly."
She smiled, but the expression didn't seem to reach her eyes. Still, she nodded.
"You were always meant to be a great warrior, Gareth. When you were born, I looked at you and said, 'He is so strong.'"
Warmth spread through his body, until he had to breathe out heavily to release it.
"Guy and Gryan are strong, too," he pointed out.
At the same time, he was remembering what the legionnaires had shouted to him as they'd passed.
"Hail the shield! Bless the shield!"
The queen said nothing, waiting patiently for him to continue. Gareth tried to untangle his knotted thoughts.
"Why do they call me the shield? Why do I get to wear the armor tonight, and not Guy or Gryan?"
There was no mistaking the sadness in his mother's eyes.
"It is your birthright, son. Not theirs."
Why did she look so melancholy?
Why should she be sad for him rather than his brothers?
Today was supposed to be a day of celebration, not mourning.
"I don't understand." "You will, princeling. Tonight is an auspicious night. You must prepare yourself."
"How?" She took a step forward, cupping her hand against his cheek. His mother had never been a particularly affectionate woman. As a legionnaire herself, she usually wore armor, which didn't make for the most comfortable hug. Plus, there was always the risk of getting stabbed by one of the plethora of weapons she carried, not the least of which was the queen blade, a dual-edged longsword strapped to her back. In size and strength, it was rivaled only by her husband's foe hammer. Gareth leaned into her touch, feeling oddly comforted by it. There was something special about a mother's touch. He wondered why it had taken him so long to realize that. She peered at him through a waterfall of dark hair.
"When you face the truth, stare back at it and don't blink. If you can do that, you will be fine."
She patted his cheek again before turning and departing the way she'd arrived, leaving Gareth to stare at his reflection once more. Gareth was holding back a huge smile, but it was like a holy dam trying to resist a deluge. Finally, it broke through, and he let himself grin amongst the slaps on his armor, the shouts of "Shield! Shield! Shield!" and all the other attention he was getting as he marched through the banquet hall. His brothers were already there, sitting in places of honor at the head table. Guy's eyes met his, slightly narrowed, but otherwise hiding his thoughts behind a mask of concentration. Gryan, on the other hand, openly glared at him, spraying juices as he bit into a large ham shank. Gareth tried to control his warring emotions, but they clanked swords against shields in the pit of his stomach, which had become a battlefield. Why were his brothers acting so strange? And why were his parents so subdued? Usually by now his father would be throwing back mugs of ale and singing bawdy marching songs. Instead, he played with his beard, his eyes empty and vacant. And then there was his mother. Typically she would be reprimanding his brothers for eating too fast or too messily, tugging their ears and pinching their arms. She just sat there, unmoving. So still, she might have been a statue of a great warrior queen. That sad look remained on her face, the same one he'd seen in his dressing room. "Did I do something wrong?" Gareth wondered. He noticed the placement of his own seat of honour, in the centre, slightly raised, higher even than the king's and queen's chairs. He frowned when his mother pulled it back slightly, gesturing for him to sit. All the attention, all the shouts and back-slapping, suddenly felt like a great weight on his shoulders. And that question continued to echo through his mind. Why me? Why me? Why me? Feeling numb, he sat down, and his mother's strong arm pushed his chair in until the table kissed his armour. Gryan kicked him under the table. Guy reached over and lightly touched his hand, before withdrawing rapidly as if he'd been burned. "Now that all my sons are here," the queen said, "we may feast. Eat up. None of this food shall go to waste on this night." The attention turned away from the head table as mugs were filled to the brim with ale and food was passed around. Gryan reached for a jug of ale, but the queen slapped his hand, filling his mug with water flavoured with ginger root instead. Gareth grinned at Guy, and his brother attempted to return the gesture. Perhaps things were going back to normal after all. For a while, Gareth was lost in the smells and flavours of the most magnificent feast he'd ever laid eyes on. There was quail stuffed with spinach and cloves, roast mutton crusted with finely crushed breadcrumbs, smoked trout drizzled with lemon and thyme. There was even an entire wild hog, an apple stuffed in its open maw. The bread was sweet and warm, the mashed potatoes creamy and garlicky, the roasted vegetables, carrot and zucchini and eggplant, just soft enough to eat, swimming in butter so fresh it must have been churned that very morning. By the time dessert came, Gareth felt like a stuffed hen bulging against his armour. Gryan was half groaning, half laughing, holding his stomach. Guy, on the other hand, had taken small nibbles of everything, but left most of the food uneaten on his plate. "You've got grease stains on your armour," Gryan said, pointing at Gareth's chest. Gareth looked down to find his plate as shiny and pristine as ever. Gryan laughed. "What a fool! It should be me wearing that armour, not you." Gareth was about to fire an insult back, but suddenly Guy was out of his chair, brushing past him, and grabbing Gryan by the shoulders, throwing him back, chair and all. He toppled over, crying out as he slammed against the floor. And then Guy was on him, pounding away, raining blows down with the force of a summer storm. The clamour of the feast dropped to silence in an instant, as forks froze midway to mouth, and conversations were cut off in mid-sentence. It had all happened so fast, Gareth could only gawk as his father sighed, pushing back his chair slowly. Gryan had managed to shove Guy to the side, and now the two were wrestling amongst breadcrumbs, trying to gain the upper hand. The king reached down with both large hands, grabbing each of his sons by their collars, not unlike a cat picking up a kitten by the scruff of its neck. He held them aloft, and Gareth waited for the reprimand, for that booming voice to scold them, to demand better from princes of the realm. To his surprise, however, the king only sighed again, placing them back on their feet. He said nothing, returning to his chair beside his wife, who reached over to hold his hand, her melancholy expression now mirrored on her husband's face. Stunned into silence and obedience, Gryan and Guy took their seats, staring at their plates. Once again, the noise of the banquet hall returned to normal as conversations resumed, Silverware clanked against plates, and ale splashed into mugs.
"What was that?"
Gareth hissed at Guy. His brother said nothing, shaking his head. Gareth turned to Grian, who met his eyes.
"Sorry I called you a fool,"
Grian said.
"I don't care about that,"
Gareth said. He gestured to Guy, who was playing with a chocolate-covered strawberry on his plate. Grian shrugged. He seemed as surprised by the entire exchange as Gareth. He had a small cut on his face, and the skin beneath one eye was beginning to bruise.
"Don't worry him," he said,
loud enough for them both to hear.
"He's just a fun killer."
He snatched a square of frosted cake and drizzled honey on it. Gareth sometimes wished he could be more like Grian, able to separate individual events into piles, examining each one at a time. Instead, he just felt overwhelmed by all that had happened today, a day that was still far from over. He twisted back to Guy, but his brother was gone. Long after the food had been cleared away, Gareth finally spotted his brother sitting beside their cousin, Hardy. Their heads were pressed close together, and they seemed to be arguing about something. Gareth had the urge to get up and demand to know what they were talking about, but Grian stopped him with a hand on his arm.
"Look," he said. "Guy was right."
Gareth followed his brother's gaze to where a train of newcomers were silently entering the room. The king clapped his hands and said,
"At last,"
and then began gesturing for a space to be cleared between the tables. Soon a large area had been vacated, which was soon filled by a half a dozen forest dwellers.
Aurians, Gareth thought.
He knew that most who lived within the bounds of the Iron Forest had at least some ore running through their veins, but these were pure Aurians, their forest-dweller blood never having mixed with that of humans. There weren't many like them anymore, perhaps 100 or less. The armor they channeled was of the highest quality, and they were also responsible for maintaining the castle's defenses. There was something about them that made it almost impossible to look away, something captivating. For one, their hair was different than that of humans, silkier and naturally imbued with a myriad of colors, silver and lilac and amber and jade. Their eyes were also different, spectacular shades of gold and silver. Like cats, they shone in the dark and allowed them to see at night. The armor they wore might have been works of art, channeled to fit like a second skin.
"Who's she?"
Grian asked, pointing at an Aurian woman on one side. She had long silver hair and eyes as golden as the noonday sun. She wore battle armor with a tall bow strapped to her back. Her face was so still and expressionless, it might have been a mask she wore. Gareth immediately recognized her.
"Gwendolyn Storm," he said.
He remembered a day a year or so ago when it was his turn to hold court with his father while he sat on the Iron Throne. The very woman he was looking at now had entered the room with a message for the king. She was a royal messenger. Though most communications were sent using Inkreed Stream, she was responsible for the most important messages, those for a king's ears only, which she carried not on scroll or parchment, but in her own mind, repeating the words out loud. His father had introduced her to him, and he'd been so dumbstruck by her beauty that his words had become stuck in his throat. Grian's eyes darted to his.
"You've met her?"
"Aye. She's a royal messenger. They say she's 1,000 years old." His brother scoffed.
"Aurians don't live that long."
"Well, she was around for the dragon massacre. I heard her talking to father about it."
"That was 8 decades ago."
"Well, she was there. And she's skin-marked."
"What?"
"Aye, it's true. Father told me. I thought only Bjorn Stonesledge bore a mark of power." Gareth shook his head.
"She bears the hero mark. She's saved hundreds of lives, or so they say."
"Oh," Grian whispered, almost reverently. Before they could say another word, the show started. Lanterns were dimmed, fireplaces were shaded. Shadows danced across wall and ceiling. Gareth glanced at Guy, who was still sitting next to Hardy, but then was quickly drawn back to the Aurians. It started slow with one of them, a male with jade hair and silver eyes, extending a single finger toward the royal table. From the tip of his finger, a shoot began to grow. It was in the shape of a tiny tree trunk, but formed entirely from ore. Though Gareth couldn't begin to comprehend how he did it, he knew this was the art of channeling, an ancient skill mastered by the Aurians centuries ago, long before the Crimeans first discovered the Four Kingdoms and began to mix with the forest dwellers. It was said the Aurians were one with the large ore deposits beneath Ironwood, that they could feel them at all times, drawing them forth when desired. Gareth watched in awe as the trunk of ore grew branches and then leaves, becoming a tree in miniature. Gryon appeared to be equally mesmerized, leaning forward without ever taking his eyes off the Aurians. The others began to channel too, and soon there was an entire forest, which they began to fill with ore panthers leaping from branch to branch, and ore hawks soaring overhead. Next, they created humans and Aurians, clad in gleaming ore, marching through the wood, arriving at a city, which sprang up from their fingers, seeming to flow forth like liquid, before hardening into walls and buildings and a castle.
No,
Gareth thought. Not a castle.
Feria, our home.
They are creating Ironwood and Feria. Out of the corner of his eye, Gareth noticed that one Aurian had not yet participated in the creation, had not channeled a single drop of ore or even moved. Gwendolyn Storm was a statue, her golden eyes taking it all in. As Gareth watched her, she finally stepped forward, using a single graceful motion to draw her bow over her head and an arrow from her satchel. She aimed the bow directly at Gareth. He flinched, but she had already moved on, changing her target to the forest of ore suspended before her. With a crisp twang, she loosed the arrow, which stopped in mid-air over the forest, before changing, stretching, growing leathery wings, a scaled hide, a spiked tail, and a maw full of razor-sharp teeth. A dragon, Gareth thought. The dragon swooped over the forest, tongues of red-hot ore shooting from its mouth, melting the trees into gnarled lumps. Other dragons soon joined the first, hunting the legionnaires, herding them into groups, destroying them in bunches. The dragon massacre, Gareth realized. They were recreating it from their own memories. They had all been there, Gwendolyn Storm included. They had all survived it. As young as they looked, any of them might have been a century old. The counterattack began in earnest, with orhawks clawing at the dragons, ore panthers biting the Calypsians, legionnaires using sword, bow, and hammer to fight back, to defend their lands, their people, their iron city. Inch by inch, the southerners were driven back, defeated. And yet it didn't feel like victory. The lumps of melted ore oozing liquid iron. Gareth felt like crying, and though Gryon tried to hide it, he could see the way his eyes sparkled with unshed tears, too. Gwendolyn Storm raised her hands, and the scene began to drain away, returning to wherever it was channeled from.
"Iron-clad sons," she said. "Our history is your history. Our lives are your lives. Our truth is your truth."
Though her eyes were dry and fierce, her words full of power and strength, Gareth saw the pain that lanced her face. In that moment, on that face, he realized that pain came in many forms, sometimes born from anger rather than sorrow.
"And now, for one, the quest begins. May Orion illuminate you on this night of nights."
Her cat-like eyes darted away, and then she was gone, naught but a blur as she darted from the hall.
"Hero marked,"
Gryon whispered. Gareth could only nod in agreement.
"Speech!"
someone shouted, and the lights were rekindled, the fireplaces restoked. Gareth blinked, the images he'd witnessed fading before his eyes. However, he knew they would forever be burned in his memory. Slowly, almost reluctantly, the king stood, raising an iron mug in the air, ale sloshing over the sides. All around the room, people stood, lifting their own drinks. Gareth recognized them all. There were legionnaires in full battle armor, Corger Morgan and Fran Porter and Boris Sneed. There were friends of the family, like the royal baker, Sweeney Bonn, and close relatives like Hardy Ironclad, his cousin, a man grown already. And on, smiling faces, people he'd known his entire life. People he cared about more than anyone in the world. Gareth tried to stand, too, but his mother pushed down on his shoulder to keep him in his